Right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. Yes, and to myself, Albert. And once again this week, we have some very special guests. First of all, Andrew's back. Andrew, you're part of the furniture these days.
Yeah, I know. You can't get rid of me. But yeah, I'm always happy to contribute though. Thanks for having me back.
No, it's our pleasure, and we do really appreciate your all your contributions in recent weeks. And it gives me great pleasure to say we have previous guest Mateo Monteiro back on the podcast for the second time. So, Mateo, thank you so much for joining us. How are you?
Hello, Albert. Hello, Andrew. Thank you very much for inviting me again, and I hope you're well. I hope Barney also is well. I did the podcast last time with him, so still a very good pleasure to come to your show and to speak about football and Portuguese football.
Well, the pleasure is all ours, and it's not by chance that we have one Porto fan and one Braga fan on the podcast. That will be the main game that we talk about this week. Before we get started, as always, just a reminder to look at the description of the episode, because you'll find links to where you can follow both of our guests today. Andrew also has a Substack, which will be linked. And Mateo is involved in two French language programs in Portuguese football. Golasso TV is the main one, which I guess is a more general Portuguese football show, but also you run Zone SC Braga on Twitter as well, which is a great account, really worth following. And I will address the elephant in the room. Obviously, it's French language content, but I always say to people, one of the few good things about Twitter that the current ownership haven't destroyed is the translate tweet function, which I use every single day for Portuguese accounts. And of course, Mateo's tweeting in French, but at the click of a button, I can read all Mateo's great content on Twitter. So even if you're an English speaker listening, don't let that be an excuse. Make sure you follow all Mateo's pages, because they're well worth following. But gentlemen, shall we get stuck straight into the football and start with what was, of course, the biggest game of the weekend, as Porto played Braga at the Estádio do Dragão. Porto's toughest league game, I think, since the opening game of the season against Sporting. And I believe the first time Braga have played one of the big three so far this season. So a big game for both sides. Porto went into the game, in my opinion, in better form, and probably the slight favourites to win. And whilst the early signs were that they could dominate the game, Braga definitely had their own spells of dominance, particularly in the last 20 or 25 minutes of the game. Ultimately, however, it did end 2-1 in Porto's favour. Andrew, as the victor of the game, I'll come to you first. A very, very important win. It definitely wasn't always easy, and in my opinion, a much closer affair than perhaps I predicted, because I did think that Porto were in noticeably better form going into the game.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the cliche is a game of two halves, and it really was a game of two halves. In that first half, Porto were really dominant. They were able to sort of get a foothold in the game. They weren't able to make a count, really. I think they were quite wasteful, particularly that Galeno chance. There was that Nico Gonzalez chance, the great run that he does, and then through the box. He should really be hitting the target, at least. But then second half, it got a lot harder. You could see there were a few issues in the midfield, and I think the midfield is still an issue. I've been saying this every week. I'm sure you're sick of hearing me say this, Albert, but there is definitely some weakness within that midfield. He strangely, or Vitor Bruno, rather strangely, decided to start Estoquiao, and then Estoquiao was playing way deeper, and Varela was kind of the eight in that sort of position. It worked, I think, in the first half. He wanted to have possession and play from deep. Second half, Varela went a bit deeper, and then the problems already started, and Braga really pushed them to the limit. They played really well that last 15 minutes or so. They looked the more likely to score another goal. I thought it was going to be a draw. They fully deserved it based on how they played. Porto kind of, I would say, got away with it. I don't like to say that about my own team, but they definitely did get away with one there. And also, I just want to say shout out to Roger Fernandes for that goal that he scored. Incredible goal. For me, the goal of the weekend. And he's only 18. It's amazing. He was trusted by Carvajal, who I've been critical of, but he trusted Roger Fernandes, and it paid off. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the midfield because one of my takeaways from the game was certainly the performance of Vitor Carvalho. I thought for Braga in midfield, who's perhaps not always been the biggest star of Braga's team, but I thought was very effective. Mateo, I think it's fair to say that Braga's season as a whole has been a little bit up and down, and this was of course going to be a very tough test. Obviously, to lose is disappointing, but your team of course were very competitive in the game and did cause Porto a lot of problems. As a Braga fan, how do you look back on it now? Obviously, without a point or a win, but with some positive signs in a tough game.
Yeah, regarding the game, I think we did a decent game, not a great game. I think we did a decent game. Totally true that the first 30 minutes was for Porto at home, big pressure always, pressing, very compact and very strong in the challenges in midfield, second balls, first balls. When you are going to Porto, you expect that, and the first 30 minutes was very difficult. I think we didn't shot have one shot on for the this first 30-35 minutes. So you're expecting that, but I think that because the two teams and Porto also playing Europa League 2 days ago, it was difficult to have this energy for the game. And after that, when you give the ball to Braga a little bit more than you expect. I think we, like you say, we are up and down this season. I think we have much fun. We need to evolve a lot. But I think we have a coach that wants to value the ball, value the build-up, value the organization. And this team, when you give a little bit more the ball to Braga, they can create some things. And they did. They did in the first half with this occasion with Vitor Carvalho. And just before the penalty. And in the second half, I think the second half was quite almost all Braga because Porto have just one chance. It's the goal of Pepe. But after that, Braga didn't have much chances, but the best ones, and of course the Roger Fernandez goal, and so on. And I think that the difference was that in the first half we had a true double pivot with Gorbi and Vitor Carvalho in midfield. And after the game was going, and Vitor Carvalho was a little bit more high on the pitch, giving more presence, and Gorbi more than the only midfielder, the only defensive midfielder, like almost what he was. And I think we have a lot of similarities between both. Gorbi said a lot to Carvalho that his example was almost what he, and I think we see a little bit of that with the game of Gorbi. And I think he's doing great since the beginning of the season, and that is. But as is the it's not the problem for his game, is a problem for Braga since many years now. We are giving too much for during big games, and I think we give the penalty, we give the second goals starting from a throw-in. So this kind of things can, and even just the first minutes of the game, Samuel is doing a fall, but you're feeling the first minutes that we are lacking focus, and it's a pattern that we are seeing a lot since months now on this kind of big games, and playing at the Dragon is a big game. So yes, as I say, I think we did a decent game, but we have a lot to improve. And so I think the draw was the deserved result for this game, but unfortunately it's when you're giving too much against not the strongest Porto I see, obviously. 20 years that I'm seeing Porto, so it's not the best Porto, but you cannot give so many things to a team like that.
What did you think of Ricardo Horta's performance? I thought he was quite poor in that game. I think he's been okay this season, but I thought he had quite a poor game. What do you think?
The last season also, Andrew, I think that many from during lot of not a lot of them, but sometimes when Ricardo was a little bit down in terms of performances, the way from his capacity to score goals, a lot of goals, was a little bit not hiding this some performances, but he had also great times. And when he came to the Seleção, it was at not just a scorer, he was also a player who was creating and doing a lot of stuff on the pitch. Now he don't create and he don't score, so of course it's a problem. But as Mateus, and we can talk about also his status at Braga, we have a problem. We have a problem of statuses. We have also if we are kind of legends in terms of goals scored for Ricardo Horta, game played for Ricardo Horta and Mateus also. So it's difficult. But now, if you're factually, he's not the best offensive midfielder of Braga. It's in my opinion, Ismaël Garbi. And I think we didn't see at all João Marques, who did a great season at Estoril last season, and I think he's a very good player. I'm following him since the 23 season with Estoril. He's a very good player with similarities with Ricardo Horta. So my first thought was, is the successor of Horta. The club thinks that he can be the next reference as in this position, but he's not playing, so it's not normal in my opinion. And for Mateus, I think it's been 14 months now that he's at one of the worst goalkeeper of the championship, and we have one of the best goalkeepers I saw at the academy, Lucas Hornacek, who is the second keeper, and he's a fantastic
How old
player.
is
And
he?
22 years old,
Oh, so
so
he's young. Okay.
he's young. But when he was 17, he was already the best
Really?
player on the from the best keeper of the under 19 championship. When he was on the under 23, he was the better keeper. And in the Liga 3 first season with the B team, he was already the best goalkeeper. He's not the best goalkeeper that we have in the academy. Is Ron Carvalho, the keeper who is in the under 21 Portuguese team now. But he's an incredible goalkeeper. And I think that when you have a player who is so down in his performances in so many months, it's not normal that we don't have kind of competition between players. And on these two positions at Braga now, you don't have competition, and it's obvious that it's not working since many months now.
So just back to Horta, sorry, Albert. Just back to Ricardo Horta. So I think for Braga to really hit those heights to take their next step, I think it's very important that he somehow finds that form again. Because I think he's so good and he's so important to that team. I get what you're saying about, you need to start thinking about the successor, and that's what clever teams do. So I agree with that for sure. But he's still definitely contribute, I think, if he can just find his form again. Because he's so good, like you say, what he did for the Seleção when he got selected, the last few seasons as well. It's a shame he hasn't sort of got his move, because I think there was a time there where it seemed like he might go somewhere. It didn't happen for him. But I definitely think he can still contribute. I think it's up to Carvajal to try and sort of get that form back to help him with that anyway. Of course, it's down to him as the player. But yeah, I really think if Braga want to take that next step, he will be an important part of that, because it's hard to find a player with that sort of experience and talent.
I completely agree. The best season Ricardo Horta did was two seasons, 3 seasons now. It was last season with Carvajal, the last
Yeah, amazing.
mandate where he did it. It was amazing. So I'm not worried that he came back to his feet and he came back to
Sure.
his experience, to his level. But like Mateus, I think that if you don't have this kind of competition, it's difficult to bypass your boundaries and to want more. He's already 13. Not having this competition for me is a little bit sad, but I completely agree with you. If Braga want to have a great season, or just a good season now, because a great season I don't know, but a good season, it's with Ricardo at a good level, decent level.
Very, very interesting. I will just come back to you, Mateus, because I think this is an interesting conversation. Because you're talking about two really, really important players for Braga in recent years, in Ricardo Horta and Mateus. It's very interesting to get your perspective on Mateus as well, as somebody who obviously watches him much more regularly than I do. I wouldn't have been as critical of him, but I absolutely trust your judgment. It does sound like perhaps some more difficult decisions need to be made at Braga if you're perhaps going to keep developing, keep improving, like for example dropping key players when their form drops. Do you think Carvajal is the manager to do that? Because my perception of Carvajal is perhaps that he doesn't want to necessarily upset the club, really. He's not really the type of manager to come in and really make wholesale changes. You know, we know he likes working with the young players, and we know he has a great affinity with the club. But I wonder whether Carvajal is the manager to drop the talisman, the captain, even when it needs to be done.
The two captains, because
Well,
you're
quite,
talking about
yeah.
the first captain and the vice captain. So I don't think it's a decision from him. I think it's a decision from the club. I think the president Salvador and the sporting directorship need to talk and to add this concern. If you don't have the support of your president and your support of your direction, you will not do the decision, because we are not talking about Jose Fonte, Pizzi from last year's world. Players who have yes, a good history in Portugal and with the CSL for Jose Fonte too, but they didn't do a lot of things with Braga. We are talking about Hall of Famer at Braga, so I understand that it's complicated. But now at this moment, I think the both of them, more Mateus than Ricardo, but both of them are not contributing to the performance of the team, and there are other players who are contributing a lot more for the performances of the team. But I completely agree that it's a difficult decision and difficult situation for the club, which is not common in our club. We don't have it's I don't remember having players here at Braga since almost a decade, more than a decade for Mateus and almost a decade for Ricardo Horta. And managing this kind of situation, I understand it's complicated, but in my point of view, we have to have a serious discussion at Braga about their level.
I think let's focus on some positives as well, obviously, because there are of course plenty of positives around Braga at the moment, and I think a lot of the players performed really well in the game. For example, we've already talked about Roger Fernandes, very good young player, played very well. He talked about the excellent midfield partnership of Gourbi and Carvalho, and I think the comparison with Gourbi and Ali Al-Masrati is a very interesting one. I mean, Ali Al-Masrati for me, one of the best players I've seen in the league in quite a few years, and very, very difficult to replace. And I think Braga have struggled without him in recent months, and anything that they can do to kind of replace him, obviously not a like for like replacement, but just to build up a solid midfield is going to be really vital. We saw Garbi come on as well, who's a really exciting player and looks really positive. So there's also good signs. I'm wondering which of the players that you saw, whose performances stood out to you, whose performances have stood out this season, and which players, if you were to have a word with Carlos Carvajal, would you be saying these are the players that are going to push us forward this season?
For me, we have one player that we are not talking a lot in Portugal, and I understand regarding his last season, which is Sikunya Kate. I think since the beginning of the season, he's back to this level, because he did a 22-23 season, unbelievable. In my opinion, I think he was just behind, just above the pair Otamendi, Antonio Silva. Two seasons ago. Last season was difficult. He did a good African Championship nation competition in January, but the team last season was so bad defensively. It was so bad. It was so difficult. Having just one player at level, it's impossible. If you have Jose Fonte not at this level, Paul Oliveira not at this level, Serdar Saçi also, the wing, found the fullbacks not quite good offensively, but so bad defensively that it was difficult to show a good level. This season is a little bit better. Nothing is, because I'm very frustrated by the game against Maccabi Tel Aviv in Europa League. I think we did a good game after the goal, but the first 40 minutes was a shame in terms of defense. But generally, yes, Sikunya Kate is back to his level. strong, very strong central defender. Many clubs know that because he had a lot of not a lot of, I don't know, but we had some rumors that Bologna, Reims, Lyon in France was interesting about his services. So I think he's still young, 25 years old. He can evolve more. I think he can evolve with in build up and in build up. But defensively, I think he's one of the best, and we are not talking so much because of all the red cards he had last season and all the bad performances. Also, I understand that, but when a player is doing great, we need to say that, to say it, and when he's bad, okay, say it also. But in Sikunya Kata, I think we have some misjudgment, and sometimes when he's very good, we are in Portugal, we are not sowing in the social media mainly that he's one of the best, and in Portugal, when he's at his level, he's one of the best for me.
I mean, that's music to my ears. I completely agree that those 2 seasons ago when he joined, and I thought he was absolutely fantastic, and I thought he would go on to be a really, really top level defender. And the following season was so disappointing. I was really devastated at how bad he did, and I did fear that perhaps his reputation was completely gone, essentially. But yeah, early performances this season have been much improved, which is great to see. Let's quickly, before we move on, bring it back to Porto as well, because I think we need to discuss them a little bit more. As I said, it was a very important win, I think, especially after losing to Sporting in the early part of the season, to get a win against obviously not the same level of opposition, but another big team. And I think one thing that you said, Matteo, which was really true, which is that they won the game with very few, not very few, but with not loads of great chances. A big part of that, of course, Samu Omrodion, who scored in the first few minutes. Obviously, the goal was ruled out, and then it was just a couple of moments which won the new game. Perhaps a little bit more, like I said, a little bit more confidence, and just being more clinical wins in the game. Andrew, I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, definitely. I thought that they seemed more composed. At certain points, they were sort of riding out the pressure. At certain points, especially when Raga really started pushing, it did get a bit worrying there. But there's quite a few experienced players in that team, players that even though they're not super old, they've been around for a while. You know, players like Pepe, Galeno, these all guys that have experience. The defense, I'm still not super convinced by. And again, I'm saying the same thing I said last week, but I'm not super convinced by them. We saw what happened against Manchester United, and you can see that sort of fragility sometimes. They were able to sort of hold it together, but I don't know if we're going to be able to hit those heights with this defense. I thought Francisco Moura again had a good game. He's had good game after good game since signing. João Mário had a tough first half. He had to come off. Okay,
Yes.
and I think you can see the difference when Martin Fernandes came in. He's obviously not as attacking or as good attacking as João Mário. He's more of just like a normal right back. I thought he played really well for a young player, but that certainly made a difference on the right. Pepe's finding a bit of form, and yeah, best start to the season in a long time. There was some boos in the stadium, bizarrely, but I think that's just one of those things. But yeah, overall, I think. You know, they played well, even though they sort of rode their luck a bit, but sometimes you have to do that. That's football.
Just quickly, where do you stand on Zé Pedro? Because I kind of understand that maybe the manager wants a balanced defense with a right-footed player, and I don't think at the moment there's a fit right-footed alternative, but
No,
he doesn't seem to be the strongest.
there isn't, and I don't really like him. So I say the defense, I mean Zé Pedro, because I'm not his biggest fan. I don't, He did a few things that were okay in that game, but I don't think he's a very strong defender. He's in there because he has to be in there. I think once Otavio's back, even though he had a bit of a tough start to the season, he'll be straight back in there. Perez has looked good, and he's kind of making up for some of the shortcomings of the rest of the defense because he is a talented centre back. But yeah, Zé Pedro is not someone that I think should be at that club. I don't think he's at that level. There's a place for him somewhere, but I don't think it's at Porto.
Yeah, and he's had some good moments, but I think consistency has been a real issue for him. And just lastly, I mean, how are you feeling about Fabio Vieira at the moment? Because, a lot of excitement when he came in. Obviously, very, very early days. I don't want to give any kind of impression that I'm saying, Fabio Vieira is not going to be able to come back and make an impact. But he hasn't really done it so far. And I think, when he came on in this game, you were thinking, oh, a bit more control in midfield, and a bit of creativity. It wasn't quite there.
He's been injured, so he's just come back, which is good. He had a few cameos. I think his first cameo was 2 games ago, I think. This cameo, when he came off the bench this time, he stank the place up. I don't think he did really anything good. He didn't add anything to that midfield. I'm not sure exactly what the idea was because he was playing sort of to the right, and it's because he's left-footed. But at that point in the game, he needs to be deeper. He needs to be trying to control that midfield and sort of get your studs on the ball and try and just keep the ball. And that's not what they were doing. I don't think he was very good in that cameo, but I think he just needs some time to sort of get back into the swing of things, understand the new team dynamic, because there is a new dynamic. And I think he needs to be in that midfield because Nico Gonzalez doesn't create the chances. He just doesn't. He's a good pair of legs. He runs up and down, but he doesn't create chances at that rate. And I think Fabio Vieira is the guy to do that.
Yeah, and fingers crossed it won't be long until we see those performances from him again. Gents, let's move on and talk about another game. Let's talk about Sporting, who continued their winning start to the season with 2-0 win over Casapia. Just the 2 goals scored in this game, so surely this means the wheels are coming off and Sporting season is grinding to a halt. But no, they came up against a very resilient Casapia side who made the game very difficult for them. They played Andrew smiling at me. We discussed Casapia last week. Don't worry, we're going to come on to that, Andrew. Don't worry. They played, I thought, in a way that a lot of Premier League teams choose to do when they come up against a big side, which is to try and limit the bigger team as much as they can, and then hope for an opportunity, perhaps on a rare counter attack or that kind of thing. They did fairly well for 40 minutes. The problem, though, comes when the team does inevitably break you down, does get the goal, and then the game plan kind of goes out the window. And Casapia kind of turned into damage limitation at that point. And I suppose, in some sense, a 2-0 loss is could have been a lot worse. We've seen Sporting brush past a lot of teams at Casapia's level this season. I'll come to you, Matteo, first, because me and Andrew have discussed Sporting a lot this season. They're obviously going to come up against this type of team quite often in the league this season, given their stature and their level of performance. The key is obviously to remain patient, not to panic, wait for the inevitable chance that will come their way, and make sure, of course, that they take it. Which I thought they did. They did very well in this game, and with every win like this, I think Sporting fans can take confidence that they're seeing a team who's going to be able to win football matches in lots of different ways.
Yes, and they have the experience now, having a coach for 4 years now. Sporting is one of the best version for a top team in Portugal since many years now, in my opinion, and it break my heart because the relationship with Ruben Amorim and Braga 5 years ago. But to be honest, now even with a back six from Casapia, I was not expecting that from João Pereira, because I saw his team last season with Alverca, and I don't think that they were the best team in Liga 3. They won it and deserved, but I don't think it was the best team in my opinion. But very skill coach, and but I was not expecting some being so deep and not wanted the ball so much, but. So it happens sometimes in Portugal to have this kind of strategy, and but I think a Sporting for maybe the 22-23 season when they came fourth, maybe the first season with Ruben Amorim, maybe they had much problems with this kind of teams, and they will maybe score a goal at the last 10 minutes. And we all know the story for being clubs in Portugal sometimes in the 10, 15 last minutes. But yes, in terms of project now, in terms of confidence in championship, it's a very strong championship team, and I think that's why I think Ruben Amorim is interesting so much. So many clubs in Europe, because having this kind of consistency in a championship, even in Portugal, but having this kind of consistency since 4 or 5 years now, even at Braga, it's unbelievable in my opinion. A shame, as I say, but unbelievable, and that's why I think the team's going deeper and deeper and deeper, in my opinion, against Sporting. If you don't if you don't propose something, it's at the end you lose and you don't show anything. So I don't think it's not the good strategy, and that's it. I think that it's the best team in Portugal, and they are the yes real candidate for the title for a second title consecutively. It's very, very bad for me. Very, very bad.
Well, I appreciate your honesty, but you're absolutely right. I think the most impressive thing about what we're seeing from Sporting this season is that not only have they managed to keep the team together and keep the ideas of the manager, but actually improve on what they've done in the last few seasons and iron out those issues that they had. Andrew, I want to talk to you about some visionaries, some pioneers, shall we say, Lito Vidigal, Paulo Sergio. These are coaches who first adopted the 6-3-1 formation. And I, for one, am delighted to see that legacy live on in the Primeira Liga in 2024 by the Casapia manager. In all seriousness, it's a difficult tactic to pull off. Casapia did an okay job trying to pull off, but where do you stand on that in terms of as a prospect, what the best option is when you're a team like Casapia coming up against Sporting? Because of course you can make a different choice. You can make a choice to try and stick to your identity and play that way, but then we do see that backfire quite heavily on a lot of occasions.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one because what would you rather do? Would you rather play terribly and lose 2-0, or would you rather sort of attack and be on the front foot and go at them from the beginning and lose 5-0, 6-0, which the Sporting team could easily do? It's a tough one. I don't like the sort of 6-3-1 shape. I'd rather a team go for it. And if you're gonna die, you die on that hill of being like, you know what, we tried, we did our best. Kind of like what Gil Vicente did a few weeks ago against Benfica, or last week even. So that's sort of my perspective on it. And I just want to give you a couple of stats that's
Oh,
I
yes.
found quite interesting from this game. So the possession, Casapia had 19% possession, 19, 1-9. Okay, 19% possession. Their pass accuracy was 60%. So they were just kicking the
Oof.
ball out, basically. Shocking, 60%.
Wow.
So they were basically holding on for dear life, and they made it very difficult. To be fair to them, they did make it very difficult. Sporting, you could see Ruben Amorim was trying to figure out what to do because it was a bit difficult. Morita came on at half time, and then he just had a free role there next to Gyökeres. Gyökeres was then moving over to the left, Morita in the middle. Trincão had, an incredible game. I thought he was really, really good. So yeah, Sporting, I don't really have anything else to say about them. Casapia, they did what they could do, 2-0, not too bad, but you lost the game and that's it. You didn't make any friends either.
Very true. There's one player I would actually like to get both your perspectives on, because other than the Victor Gyökeres penalty, Sporting's only other goal in the game came from Daniel Bragança, who for the first time in his career scored 3 goals in 3 consecutive games. A player that I always find very interesting. He's 25 years old. I always forget that he's not 21 or 22 anymore, no longer a young man, but has never quite forced his way into the core group of starting players at Sporting. But obviously now with a few injuries in the team, he's been given an opportunity to start regularly for Amorim's side. And I think it's fair to say he's doing a very good job of staking a claim for that position. Matteo, I'll start with you. I mean, what do you make of Daniel Bragança and whether he has a place in a team of Sporting's level? Because it's been a kind of a long journey for him to really get some recognition at Sporting.
Yes, he had also some bad injuries. So, for him, I think for Sporting, I think it's very, very valuable to have a player who is not a first starter on the team, but having him in the group and playing when we need to in Championship, or playing in Europa League with a kind of midfielder, and a midfielder who understand almost everything you want. Technically, he has many resources. I think at the beginning, when he was at Farense and starting at Sporting in the first team, it was more about physically and having this kind of density in midfield. And I think now with the time, it's you're obviously improved. So, and understand everything very well. If he needs to play as a defensive midfielder, he can do it. If you need him to be a little bit higher and to make these kind of runs from the midfield to the box, he can do it also. So having this kind of player, and also I think now since many weeks now, we see also his leadership. He has he's the captain sometimes we are at Sporting. So this is the kind of players that you want to have in your group, not being a starter every day, but when you need him, when you need him, he's here and he's doing what the coach wants. So honestly, having this kind of density, not just in midfield for Sporting, but in almost all the positions, is the best positive point we can say about their project since 4 or 5 years now.
Definitely. And I mean, Matteo talks about versatility. For me, Andrew, that's one thing that really stands out for me, like versatility and leadership for someone who at quite a young age is, I think that's what impresses me the most about him personally.
Definitely. I think Ruben Amorim wants his players to be very versatile as well, particularly his midfielders. Bragança, technically he's always been good. His technical ability has always been good. I think he's just had to find his place, find his rhythm in that sort of squad, and they've sort of been on this building trajectory of getting better every season, and he's had to sort of follow that, which is, I think we're seeing that, and he definitely has a place in this team. And like Matthew says, if you're Ruben Amorim, you've got a guy that you can call off the bench, and he'll give you a 8 out of 10. He'll take your instructions very well. He knows exactly what you want. He'll play a little bit deeper, play a little bit more advanced, do what he has to do. And he's great on the ball. And I think that's a very important trait for Ruben Amorim's midfield, particularly very functional, technically good players.
Yeah, absolutely. And a player who clearly loves the club and has a great passion for the
Definitely.
team. It's really valuable asset. Before we move on to the next game, just quickly, Matteo, me and Andrew spoke about Casapia last week. I'm interested to get your perspective simply on where you think they are as a team. I know you have some familiarity with the manager, but I'm torn with Casapia between admiration of the fact that they're a very small side. It's easy to forget what a small team this is with a small budget and their ability to stay in the league, and also sometimes perhaps a bit frustrated with what I feel perhaps slightly underachieving. I feel like there's potential there, and they've always had good players in their side.
Yes, he's a young coach, and we need to say that what he did in third division with Amor first of all, and after that Alvarca last season, is good. At this age, it's not normal to have so many competitive teams in this kind of leagues and to win so many games in this kind of confound championship, which is very very competitive. But I'm not seeing him as I'm saying that, like a Ruben Amorim when he was at Braga in the third division. Also, the idea in terms of football, the idea in terms of how you want of football, I think he's young, but he's not I don't see a lot of differences with the average Portuguese coach, in my opinion. Very good positionally, very sometimes not so risky. They don't take too much risk when you some patterns very well built in defensively, offensively, but nothing. Even if we can say that Ruben Amorim also is a risk-averse coach, but I think despite all of that in European competition, I saw a coach that to who want to build from the back and want to have some good patterns, and is it a bit more less risk averse than other coaches, from Portuguese coach in my opinion. And João Pereira for me is a good coach. He know I think he knows his job. He can start in first division in Portugal with a good team offensively and defensively. Since I know him, I didn't see on his team exceptional things in terms of football ideas, and that's why in the last question I said that he was not the best coach last season in third division. Not saying because it was the B team of Braga, but despite I think that Custódio in terms of a coach that strategically sometimes during the games had some difficulties. His idea, his first idea with the 3-4-3 also, but his idea was much more courageous and much more valuing the young players he had. And I think that's why it was a shame that we don't came fine, we don't go goes up in the second division last season, but we had a very great second part of the season as the B team of Braga. And the idea, the how we wanted to play the games and how we wanted to win the games was much more valuable in my opinion. And that's why I think that Costello will not I don't know if it was it, if it will be at Braga. I think it can be in other places, but I'm valuing much more of these kind of ideas, and as I was valuing much more the idea of Ruben Amorim when he was in our B team. And like another coach that is now completely forgotten, it was Vasco Vasco Faísch, former coach of Farense also 2 years ago. I think raw coaches with a great strong idea even in the lower divisions, and I didn't see that with John Pereira. And so that's why I'm not expecting a lot. I think he can easily, I don't know, but it's crazy. We're in Portugal and you're with Casapia, but I think that he can reach the keeping the team in the first division this season. But much more than that, I don't know. I'm not expecting a lot.
Okay, well, I'll take that as a positive. I'm pleased to hear that you think they'll survive at least. I'd be happy to see them survive. And I think, in fairness, for a team like Casapia, the aspirations can't really be much higher than that. That should really be the first priority to survive. And I think it's actually a great success that they have survived for quite a few seasons now. Guys, I'm very keen to talk about the next game. We're 8 weeks into the Premier League season now, and whilst it has been very enjoyable, we've had a lot of good games. We've seen some great players, some great goals, and we have had a decent amount of drama with some managers leaving, etc. One thing that I think we've been lacking, though, is a game with that kind of Premier League trademark chaos that we've come to know and love. And I think we got close to that this weekend with Vitória 2 Boavista 2, as Vitória were winning 2-0, and on track for all 3 points until Boavista scored not one but two stoppage time penalties in the 96th and 104th minute of the game to earn a dramatic point in incredible fashion. I don't think Portugal must be one of the leagues with the most games ending with a one at the beginning of the time, which is it's not something you'll see very often. Do you know what, Matteo? I'll allow you to come in first, because as a Braga fan, I'm sure it did put a big smile on your face when you saw that the second penalty went in. But I think personally, it wasn't necessarily undeserved of a comeback. I think in terms of the performance, absolutely, Vitória were the better team in the first half, but Boavista really did come back into it in the second half. I thought they created good chances themselves. At the beginning of the season, I know myself and others were very concerned for Boavista, with them being under a transfer embargo and already having a pretty weak squad, and not to mention all of the financial issues that we know that they do have kind of hanging over them. The one thing that I have seen from them, though, this season on multiple occasions is, to their credit, a real fighting spirit and a real team unity, which is, if I'm honest, the last thing I expected to see. I was worried that we'd see a group of players who'd kind of given up, maybe if their wages have been delayed and all this kind of thing. But they seem to be, at the very least, a very committed team, and I think that level of commitment and that desire was really what got them over the line in this game.
Yes, and I think we need to talk about a little bit about the coach of Boavista, because I'm completely agree with you. When you see the team, when you see all the things we are rounding the club since many years now, but more because I live in France, so everybody knows the situation of Bordeaux, and it's the same owner is Gerard Lopez with Boavista. So it's when you're Portuguese, you really do the connection, and obviously that you're worried about. I'm not a big fan of Boavista. I'm not a big fan of their fans, but it's just a Braga thing, and with Vitória also, if you understand. But they are courageous, because I think the team is not it's not great. There are some good players, but it's not exceptional. And when you have a so bad context around your club, it's even with I saw from in France, we have a great example of like Lyon, which is a team with a lot of stars, a lot of players, a lot of great players, some good coaches. And if the context is bad, all the things are bad. And despite that, I think the coach has this enfin, had the Cristiano Bacci has the power to unify this group and behind the cause to save the club. So I was at the best for the second game of the season against Braga. We won. I think the draw was the result more deserved. And just saying that is speaking that Boavista did a good game and. Just a current game, a game with players which found coach who tell to the team that quite clearly what they had to do in defense, what they had to do in offensive moments. And that's very good credit for a coach because the situation is, I think, for a coach, it's the baddest situation you can have. And it's the biggest challenge you can have for him, not buying players, not I think the problem with the goalkeeper also a few weeks ago. Honestly, if they stay in the first division, I hope so. Honestly, because it's I don't like seeing clubs like Boavista in Portugal, like Leiria, like Setúbal, seeing them in the lower divisions. I think it's very bad for the championship and for the Portuguese football. But I think. Honestly, they can do it, but it will be obviously very difficult.
Yeah, and it does seem to be remarkable how they have a habit of surviving in, I think, for the last two or three seasons now. I've looked at Boavista as a club with the potential to be relegated, and yet they do seem to continue to find a way to survive. And I did wonder which manager would be crazy enough to take the job. And they obviously have this Italian manager, Chris Bacci, I believe his name is that, who he's doing a wonderful job, which it's surprising to see. Andrew, I'm not sure. I don't think we've spoken about Boavista on the podcast yet. I don't know if you shared some of the same concerns maybe at the beginning of the season. But yeah, like I said, I'm definitely impressed with, I mentioned like the motivation and all that kind of stuff. I think it's also worth remembering that there's some quality players in the side as well. They still have Bosnić. They still have players like, Salvador Agüero has some quality. The player Raisinho, who came on and scored the penalties. They still have Bruno Onyemaicho, who I think is a good defender. Rodrigo Abascal, another good player.
Abascal,
So,
yeah.
there are names that we've seen in the Premier League for quite a long time with some quality. And on paper, they should have enough to survive. Obviously, the thing about Boavista is that they just seem to have these issues that follow them around and are so hard to shake off.
Yeah, you worry for a team like Boavista. They're a great sort of historical club in the country. They're one of only two teams to win the league that aren't called Sporting Porto or Benfica. So you want that sort of team to always be around and to survive. And obviously Bordeaux were a storied club in France, and we saw what happened to them. So you do think about that sort of thing. And you're right about their players. I think Bosnić won't be there come the summer. I think this continues. I'd be shocked if he's here. Even in last summer, there was kind of talks about him going elsewhere. He was trying to sort of make a move. But they keep surviving, and great credit to Cristiano Bacci. He obviously knows how to motivate them. He knows how to set the team up in a specific way, and he's doing a good job with not a lot of support and a lot of positivity, let's say. Because I agree with Matteo, if you're in a sort of toxic environment in that sort of world, it can quickly go from bad to worse. And he used Leon as an example, and he's talking about the American owner, who I'm sure we all know, and all the kind of crazy things he does. And that's the sort of thing that can go bad very quickly. And you don't want that to happen for Boavista. They're a local rival of Porto, but it's great to have those sort of clubs up there doing what, they're trying to do, which is survive, I guess, at this point. But you want them to thrive eventually. And hopefully they do, because yeah, they are a sort of good historical team with a good fan base. Not everyone's fans of their fan base, but yeah, they do have a good fan base.
No, absolutely. As you say, a club with great importance in the history of the league,
Definitely.
which is what we want to see continue. And I know that they do have a new president now, so perhaps there's some change that could be made there. Obviously, the thing that needs to change is financial issues off the pitch, which are very much out of their control. But yeah, just to reiterate, I think the thing that has impressed me or surprised me in a positive sense the most is that the way that the team have really banded together and continue to fight for the badge and fight for the fans and what it means to play for Burmese, which is the one thing that I thought would probably be the first thing to go when you know the players are maybe not being paid on time and all that kind of stuff. But that's a real positive. Mateo, I'm not trying to torture you, but I am going to, if you can, put your rivalries aside, ask for your impartial perspective on Vitória Guimarães, because it's been a decent season. Perhaps they're in a sticky patch at the moment. Obviously, they did extremely well to get into the Europa Conference League, and judging by the first game that they played against Celje, it does seem to be a competition that hopefully they can progress in. They've also lost some key players, though, of course, and brought in some exciting ones as well. What's been your perspective on their start to the season so far? Because the recent results haven't been perfect, but it's been in general a good start, I think.
Yes, good start. I can also, I just can say that because it was difficult to for River just after the, I think, great last season. And you and Jota Silva goes to Nottingham, and obviously you lose your best defense for your best player, and you need to rebuild some things. And Mangas also leave the club very later in the transfer window. The transfer window was already closed in Portugal, so you have this kind of stuff in Portugal to adapt to this kind of thing. So a lot of credits to him. He already did a great job last season with Moreirense, and we didn't talk too much about that. Main, in my perspective, in Portugal, but it's always in Portugal, you're not speaking a lot about these kind of clubs. But what he did last season with Moreirense is very good. Of course, Vitória did great things, but when you were in the second division 1 year back and you did what he did with a club like Moreirense, when you did these kind of things with a club like Moreirense, is fine. It's always great. So he's just showing the value of his work already in second division with Académica Coimbra. You almost put the club again in the first division, and I wanted so bad this thing, and already. It didn't happen, but is a great coach, and may even if I think that Vitória is overperforming a little bit. Even last season, he was a little bit of an overperformance, and when in Portugal, when Vitória is overperforming a little bit and Braga is underperforming a little bit, we are seeing this kind of thing that we are at the same level. We are not, but I understand the thing. But despite all of that, they have good players. There are a lot of good players from the academy. Thomas Sandel, I think, is the main reference. Some good ideas in terms of transfer window. Thiago Silva, a few months now, already last season, but I think it was a very good idea to have a player like that to be the main reference in terms of creativity in your team. So some good ideas, some good choices of coaches now, because I saw a season, true season with Vitória, with five coaches for during one season. So we'll say that for now and for one time, they are not doing bad things regarding their coaches. But this is an Yes, I think they're a little bit overperforming because the thing from the games in the Europa Conference League in August was very, very, very strong for the team they beat. So I think for the confidence, it was very good, very, very good. But in terms of, and that's, I think that's why they won the derby against us, because we were not at this kind of level of confidence, and they were, and they did what they did, and they deserved the victory during this derby. But I still think that in terms of consistency of play, they still can do better. They have a lot of to improve, but for a very good start of the season. But the games against Porto at home, the games against last from the last game against Boita is showing that they are not the best Vitória we saw since years now. They are a team to improve, and I hope that they will not improve a lot, but they have the margin to progress. I think still progress and having a great season to finish five again, but it's good for them.
Well, I appreciate your impartial perspective. One or two little digs, but that's all right. That's all right. Andrew, we one thing we spoke about on the last podcast was, obviously Vitória in a slightly sticky patch of form, perhaps needing to catch a break. They had a good boost in Europa Conference League, good win against Celje, first game in the Conference League proper, good to get a win. It would have been ideal then to back that up with a win at home in the league, and they were on track to do that. How do you think it's an oversimplification to essentially say they should have killed off the game when they had the chance, because they were 2-0 up and they had maybe one or two opportunities for the third goal. And some might say that perhaps they were unlucky with the penalty decisions. I mean, I don't really want to, I don't mean, I don't really have an opinion on that myself. It did feel like a slightly, it was obviously an exceptional situation and strange circumstances, and sometimes that happens in football where things just get a bit crazy, and what happened happened. But maybe if we're looking at this as an exciting game for neutrals to watch and etc., Vitória will probably look back at the game and think, well, that should have been a comfortable 2-0 or 3-1 win.
So, if we're talking about classic Primeira Liga drama, two penalties in stoppage time, and one of them being controversial, one of them for sure is controversial.
Yeah.
That is heritage. That's Portuguese league heritage, and
Yes.
that's what we expect. So I think Rui Borges, the international break is just what they need. They look like a tired team.
Definitely.
I think they need a bit of a reset. The draw, it's a draw, but it's a bad result for them. It's a draw, but it's a bad result for them for sure. Boavista sort of drew the game in that bizarro, weird way with the two penalties in stoppage time. But I think that's a lack of concentration from Vitória. And that comes with fatigue and just playing too many games, because they were dominant in the first half and they had a few good chances. They probably should have killed the game off, but they just seem tired. I think they just need to reset. I mean, it's last three games, 2 points. They were sort of going up and up and up, and then it's all kind of gone a bit wrong with two disappointing draws for sure. Rui Borges, now he can probably start worrying a bit, because there's other teams around him that are doing well, so he should start worrying a bit and making sure he starts getting these things right. But shout out to Reizinho, by the way, Boavista, for scoring two penalties. That's a lot of pressure to sort of come on, get two penalties, and then just put them away. So shout out to him. That's really, really impressive stuff. But back to Vitória. I mean, I've got a bit of a soft spot for them. When I went to Portugal, I went to Guimarães, and it was so nice to go around and just see. I mean, they really support that team all across the whole city. It's in all the sort of in all the balconies and all the shops. So you want a sort of team that's so well supported in Portugal, because we know that most teams aren't that well supported by their local people. It's so nice, for a place like that they support their club so much, and you want them to do well. But they have a very thin squad. So in footballing terms, with all these games they've already played, they're adapting to now playing in Europe like this. They've lost those players. Jota Silva, big loss for them. Ricardo Mangas, like Matheus said. So they're adapting. So I don't think the beginning of the season for them, how well it started, I'd be surprised if they can maintain that, or even if they can get back to that. I think they're going to struggle going forward, which is a shame. But yeah, you can just sort of see it kind of falling apart a bit.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think they've looked tired for a few games now. So yeah, maybe the break will be a good thing for them. And in the meantime, these types of games are a good thing for us, the neutral. I did attempt my annual attempt at trying to get something going on Twitter. I tweeted the hashtag quintessential Chagres. I couldn't see it trending when I posted it, but I'll check maybe by the time. Maybe by the time we finish recording, it'll be all over Twitter. Before we end, let's try and squeeze in one more game, because I really want to talk about Gil Vicente. They're a club that I really enjoy watching. They had a very impressive 3-0 win at the weekend over Estrela Amadora. Estrela, they had gotten their first win of the season the week previously, and we thought maybe they turned a corner. Perhaps they could keep the momentum going. It didn't look that way in this game. They were very poor, I thought. It was another great example of Gil Vicente's new kind of dynamic duo, Kanya Fujimoto and Felix Correa, who were the two stars of the game, I thought. They got a goal each and both put in very good performances. Andrew, we spoke about Gil Vicente last week, which was an interesting discussion because obviously they lost the game to Benfica 5-1. That said, we thought they performed pretty well. And I have to say, I went back and looked at their results. The results have not been as good as I thought, which is really interesting. So, they've been performing well. This is only their second win of the season, which I didn't realize actually. But I do look at them, especially in a performance like this, and think that there's a lot of potential there and a lot of good players. And if they can keep things cohesive and they can keep clicking, I think there's potential there.
Yeah, it's definitely a good way to bounce back after that rather undeserved thrashing at the hands of Benfica last week. Gil were impressive. Bruno Pinheiro, what he's doing there is really interesting. He has a team playing really well, playing really good football. I like the way they press. He has them playing out from the back. They defend really well. Fujimoto, Felix Correa, like you said, they're star players. I thought Jordi Mbula was pretty good in this game as well. Estrela didn't play badly, but Gil Vicente, you could tell there was a sort of gap in quality. And I'd be interested to see sort of how it, or if Gil can keep this going. You're right about the results. The results haven't been as good as we think they would be, but there's going to be sort of some time to get used to playing like this and learning how to get results in other games that maybe they should. And it's quite difficult because we don't get to see teams that aren't sort of the top three, four, maybe five teams in the country play this kind of football and be brave enough to go to play against Benfica and play out from the back and do what they do and then not be discouraged. Because eventually when they start losing and they start getting close to the relegation places, most managers start panicking and then they say, let's park the bus, let's play a 6-3-1 like a certain team, and then let's hold on for dear life. So yeah, I'd be interested to see how long they can keep this going. I think Fujimoto has been incredible. If he carries on like this, I don't think he's at Juventus next season. He's probably somewhere higher up in Portugal or maybe Spain or something like that. So yeah, I thought it was a really good game from them, and if they can keep it going, who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the next step for them is about converting good performances into wins and into points,
Yeah.
because that will really help them kick on.
It's very difficult to do in this league, though.
It's
That
much
it's
easier said than
so
done.
yeah, it's so difficult to do.
Much easier said than done. Mateo, we know you're not a fan of Sporting, not particularly a fan of Porto, Vitória, Boavista. I'm wondering whether though perhaps you have a soft spot for Gil Vicente, because I know some Braga fans do. Although maybe not everyone.
Yes, I have, but not love for Vicente, but I don't hate Vicente at all, not at all.
Excellent, excellent. We're on the right track then. But yeah, I
No.
mean, what did you see some of the game, and how do you think of their players and the manager that they've got this season?
Yes, I didn't have the chance to see the last game, but oh yeah, I was at Barcelos for the games against Braga, and I think for a team with a coach since just for 3 weeks, they were playing amazingly well for against Braga, which we were tired. This game, it was the last game of August. We just came from 2 days ago from Austria against with the winner against Austrian. But about if I'm going back to my speech about the average Portuguese coach, I think Bruno Pinheiro is not one of them. I think Bruno Pinheiro is one of the Paulo Fonseca coach in Portugal, in my opinion. And we saw that at Estoril 2 3 years back now, in second division, and after that in first division, because he had the main skills of a Portuguese coach defensively, so he know quite well. I know that the games against Benfica last week was different, but he know quite well to set up a team defensively. But offensively, with the ball, is much more cohesions than the average coach in Portugal, and that's why you want to see a little bit more about Gil Vicente. That's what we. We want to see the teams of Bruno Pinheiro, and I'm not surprised that he's doing well and for weeks now. So yes, in the coming weeks, I think it will be one of the best team to see. Not so sure about the results, because as Andrew said, in Portugal, almost every, not saying everybody, but almost everybody behind the top five, top six, have the same level of players generally. So I think the ideas can do the difference, and I think Bruno Pinheiro has a lot of ideas and a lot of great ideas to value the ball, to value football, and that's what I like him as a coach.
I have a question for you guys, actually. So I've been trying to figure this out. Andrew, their goalkeeper Andrew, is he good or not? Because I don't know. Because sometimes I'll watch him and I'll be like, oh, he's actually good. And then sometimes I'm like, he seems too short. He seems to make the wrong decisions. What do you guys think?
Personally, I do like him. I think he had one particularly exceptional season, which I'm not sure whether that was last season or maybe even the season before. I think he's actually been around for longer than you think.
Yeah, he's been around
Perhaps
a long
I
time.
do sometimes wonder with these players of kind of his age, where a young player who comes into the league and has a breakthrough season, whether there's an element of sticking around too long and perhaps going a bit stale. Perhaps there isn't the same motivation. Perhaps they're not being pushed in the same way every day. Maybe he's a kind of an example of that, where, because as you say, he's not been as consistently impressive as I think he was at one point. But I wonder whether maybe if he was to make a move and challenge himself a bit further, whether he would be able to get that back. But
Yeah, he had a bad game against Benfica. I mean, it was a 5-1, but he made some howlers in that one. What do you think, Mathieu?
I think he's still very young, and 2 3 years back he was even younger, and I don't remember a lot of goalkeepers. The season he did with Ricardo Soares, the great season of Gil Vicente, the last couple of months, he was incredible. The games against Benfica, Porto, Sporting Braga, he was stopping everything. I didn't see a goalkeeper making so many great performances in such short period of time against big teams in Portugal. I remember Fabiano, I don't know if you remember him, at Olhanense many years ago, who did a rush, incredible rush with Olhanense against Porto, Benfica, Sporting, many, many saves. I think they drew sometimes 0-0 back in the days, and it was unbelievable. And Andrew had this kind of things, the 2 great season he had between 2021 and 2023. Last season was a little bit much complicated, but I think it's normal for a goalkeeper with such a young age. It's difficult to have a great level of consistency even in Portugal, but I still think that he has the core skills to have a great career, and I'm impressed that he's still at Gil Vicente, even 2 years ago, about 1 year ago, after his couple of great season. I think it was a keeper to go, not in big team in Portugal because it complicated, but even abroad in other championship to show his skills, because in my opinion it's a very good goalkeeper, and such a young age in Portugal is very rare also to have this kind
So I'm
of
guessing you
keeper.
would take him to replace Mateus. You would take him at Braga.
I'm not taking him because I
You've got your
think that
guy.
we have our guys. You have because I talk about him, but João Carvalho at the B team is an unbelievable. I honestly think he's better than Diogo Costa
Oh,
at his
wow.
age, in my opinion, in terms of
I mean, Diogo
defense.
Costa's a little bit on the overrated side. I know he's Porto's keeper, but
When he was 20, 21, I think
He makes a, he makes some bad decisions but anyway, he's a good goalkeeper. He's a good goalkeeper.
Yes, but we have him, we have Konchik, so I'm not taking Andrew because I love my academy, but
Fair
obviously
enough.
he's better than Matheus right now.
Very good. Well, gentlemen, I think we'll leave it there for this week's episode. As always, plenty we didn't have time to discuss, including the whole fog situation with Benfica, which maybe we'll have to do a whole bonus podcast on fog gates over the international break. It is the international break, so there might be a week or two off, but in the meantime, just need to say thank you very much for listening, and just a reminder, of course, to follow our esteemed guests from today's episodes. All of their information will be in the description of this episode, but yeah, just need to say thank you very much, guys, and we'll chat soon.
Thank you, Albert. Thank you very
Thank
much.
you.